come along with us as we explore the broad world of preservation and the work being done to preserve, interpret, and save our past in a 21st century world. From aquaculture to historic foodways to forensic modeling, we're talking weekly with experts from across the globe. This is your host, Nick Redding. Welcome to PreserveCast. This is Nick Redding, and you're listening to PreserveCast. Today, we're excited to be chatting with Jen DeWeese, who is the president at the Maryland Center for Construction, Education, and Innovation, MCCEI. And we're going to be learning all about what it is that they do and how this dovetails with the work of preservation and how construction is being facilitated and how the industry is being sustained through this important component, and also how her work as the co-founder and construction lead at the Maryland Apprenticeship Center connects back to all of this as well. So first things first, we'd like to get to know people and where their background is and all that kind of thing. So where did you grow up and what got you so excited about construction and apprenticeships?
So I grew up in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, came to Maryland when I went to college. I went to Loyola College then, now University in Maryland. And I was a communications major with a minor in sociology. Sounds like a career construction, right? So I got a job out of school working for Whiting Turner in their marketing department and soon realized that I had made a grave mistake, that I could make a heck of a lot more money if I was on the operations side than I was in marketing. So I was given the opportunity to do some project engineers training to become a better marketing person. And again, realized like, actually I have the aptitude for this. I was answering questions right next to the kids that I just spent 4 years in college learning it. Now I had spent about 4 years at Whiting Turner learning about construction. So that wasn't just like I was anything special. It was just, I was absorbing what I was hearing for 4 years. So then got the opportunity to actually work in construction management as a project engineer on projects and did that for about 4 years or 5 years until I went back into marketing. And then during that time, joined NAWIC, which is the National Association of Women in Construction, and just kind of fell in love with the idea of how I got to where I was. And like many women that I met in NAWIC, most of us did not intend on becoming construction workers. We just kind of fell into the industry. I realized we are an untapped talent pool and just kind of fell into the workforce development sphere that way.
And so was MCCEI a thing when you joined, or were you part of the expansion of it, or how did that all come together?
Yeah. So MCCI, we're actually celebrating our 15th year this year. So I've only been with MCCI for four. So definitely existed well beyond me, but I did meet Bob, the previous president, when I was in NAWIC, and soon after they were founded, and maybe not founded, but were really making a name for themselves in Maryland. And NAWIC and MCCI, we partnered on some events together. They supported some of our outreach events towards young children with our Camp NAWIC and our Black Kids events. And then similarly, when MCCI got opportunities to like Kenwood High School was looking to increase their numbers of young women in their plumbing and carpentry programs. NAWIC, we rallied around and got some women in construction to talk about our careers, and they were able to increase their enrollment that way. So there was like this partnership between the two organizations. And since I was so involved in NAWIC, just kind of became involved in MCCI as well.
And tell people about MCCI, because I think for like the preservationists listening, whether they be here in Maryland or really around the country, the trades can kind of be a little bit of a mystery, and the construction industry can kind of be that as well. And I think that this is a good example of a way to connect and interface with the construction industry, because without construction, like we sort of joke internally that like preservation without historic trades is just good intentions. Like there's no one to actually then do the work. So it's really important to be able to interface with the industry. What is something like MCCI? What does it do? And how, you know, how can people connect and interface with this organization?
Yeah. So our mission is to diversify the talent pool of the construction industry while also growing the talent pool. I'm sure you've heard that we are facing a workforce shortage. By 2037, 54% of the current workforce will have retired. And in construction, for every four people that retire, only one is coming back into the industry. So we're in a dire situation when it comes to workforce. The infrastructure that is currently crumbling all over America cannot get fixed without skilled trades folks. And I'm sure we just said that. So our mission is to change the narrative around what a career in construction is like, because a lot of people don't know what they, when they think of a construction worker, they think of the road crew that they drive past on the highway, the plumber that comes in to fix the toilet. They don't understand the full like depth and breadth of the industry and the amazing opportunities and the really cool places that you can work. I mean, just I know from having the National Park Service, for example, at our Camp Nawick and hearing the amazing stories that these women were telling us about, you know, being in the national park and camping out under the stars and hiking to go fix some remote ancient facility is really cool. Like what kind of, like that is something that everyone like dreams of. And the construction industry has those types of careers, like even beyond just preservation.
But there's a challenge in diversifying the workforce, I think, sometimes because people don't see themselves represented in it, or they don't see that as an option for them. Absolutely. So how, beyond just the, like we said, like preservation, beyond the good intentions, how do you make it stick? Like what actually works? And I guess more to the point, I feel like sometimes people with the trades are like, well, that kind of looks cool, but I don't want to go through all the effort of training and only to learn I really don't like being a plumber or I don't like being a carpenter. So how do, and not only for you, but like what are the lessons learned here for how you give people that opportunity to see if it's the right thing? Because I think a lot of people around the country, particularly in the preservation field, are very aware that the trades are imperiled, or, you know, whatever scary word you want to use. We're having some problems here right now. And people want to help grow them and want to help diversify them and want people to see themselves reflected in it. But sometimes they're just like at a loss for where to even start. So what have you guys done that you feel like really has been a success that's worked?
Yeah, I think the key is giving kids hands-on exposure to the trades when they're young, right? And I'm talking middle school, maybe high school, early high school. But the way that schools are run these days, like in order to choose like a CTE, a career in technical education pathway, you're usually choosing it by like eighth or maybe ninth grade. So that's when the kids are actually getting to learn a trade in school. So if they haven't self-identified as being interested in that, by that point, you kind of miss them when it comes to the actual curriculum that they learn in school. So I mentioned Camp Nawick that we have partnered with you guys and the National Park Service. That has been a really cool thing for us. For about 8 years, we've been running for middle and high school girls to learn about careers in construction and giving young girls a power tool or a hammer, or in your case, they were pointing, you know, mixing mortar and pointing up brick. Realizing like, wow, this is actually really fun. Like they were enjoying themselves. And we have had girls come back 3-4 years in a row when they first were like drugged there by their mothers, right? They didn't want to go. And then another thing that we're doing, if you can't do, I mean, a summer camp is a big endeavor to take on, right? We do Construction Career Day, where we have hands-on activities. We're bringing 500 high school students to a field trip. And we have about 25 companies or organizations that set up a little hands-on demo and their kids are with them for like 15-minute increments and moving on to the next one. And we've seen major improvements in the interest. So I think the survey coming in said 60% of kids weren't interested in a career in construction, but when they left, 60% were. So that's a 20% change from the 40 to the 60 from just doing a couple hours of doing some hands-on stuff. And it was really amazing. And we've seen a lot of interest in the schools in providing these types of things to students. So now we're working on creating, that's for our high school students. We're working on creating like a mobile construction career day for middle schools too.
So there's a lot of different ways that people can actually have an impact. And you're seeing that. I'm curious, have you, because this is me hearing foundations saying, okay, but what is the actual impact, right? Like they want to know, like, okay, so of those young women who went through that program, even anecdotally, do you know some that have now gone on? Because that's 8 years of it that are now in the trades.
Yeah. So I would say there's the last year we had a young girl, it was 2 years ago, who was a senior, and it was her second year coming back, and her mom was in construction. She was working at a restaurant, and she would come work in a restaurant at night to pay the bills and come during the day to get that hands-on training. So I believe she's working with her mother now that she's graduated. And then a few years after our very first one of the parents had reached out to me and said, my daughter's finally graduating. She was, I think, eighth grade when she came to our program the first time. She said she's really interested in an apprenticeship program. So I gave her some information on that. So it is, I mean, we only do 20 kids a year, but it is really exciting. And then this one girl that comes back 3 years, her mom said, well, she really wants to do communications, so she doesn't want to be in construction. And I said, well, but that literally is what my entire career was. Like, Monica, like, we've been together for 3 years now. You know that I was in marketing. Like, you can be a woman in construction and be, you know, so while she wasn't in the trade, she was still very interested. She loved coming to camp. So I haven't given up yet. She's only a ninth grader, so she may end up changing her mind.
And, you know, specifically to women in construction, is there a field that women tend to be drawn more to, or that is more conducive to women in construction, or where women often head, or is it just kind of wide open?
So I say that women can do any job that a man can do, and there are women doing every job that men have. I will say statistically, women are more in construction management roles than in, or a professional role, than they are in the trades. Women right now only make up about 4% of the trades. But here in Maryland, we actually have the fourth highest percentage of women in construction, including all aspects of the industry. We're at 14.2%. We're the first city outside of the state of Florida that had, like, on the list. There's three Florida cities, and then there's Baltimore. So it's actually really exciting on that. But I would say the majority of women that I know, when it comes to trades themselves, there's a lot of women that are electricians. But there's more electricians than there is any other trade in the state of Maryland right now. So I think that's part of it too, is that when you need the volume, perhaps the people that are recruiting are realizing they need to recruit women too, because there's just only so many men that want to be in construction. So you need to branch out.
That's fascinating. And I didn't realize the numbers were that low. I do know that in the historic trades, women are better represented, particularly within like park service and things like that, than they are elsewhere. So, you know, there's sort of a boost for the historic trades and an opportunity for, you know, young women or middle-aged women for that matter, who are interested in sort of changing a career and looking at that as an opportunity. I think that's kind of exciting. So not only are you focused on diversifying the workforce and bringing in new people and helping fill this massive need, but you also use apprenticeships as a big part of that. Mm-hmm. For someone listening, and if they listen to this podcast, hopefully by now they know what an apprenticeship is. But for someone new who's listening, who's like, I don't know what an apprenticeship is, what is an apprenticeship, and why do you care about them?
Yeah, apprenticeships are an earn while you learn model. So typically the way we most of Americans are trained is they go to school, pay money to go to school or get a scholarship or whatever, and then they get a job. But apprenticeships, you're working full time while also getting related instruction concurrently. And in the construction industry, the related instruction can be provided by your union, the Joint Apprenticeship Training Council. It could be provided by a sponsor like intermediary, like an ABC, or you can go to like a community college. There are also trade schools, but those you pay for. So to me, it seems silly to pay to get to learn a construction trade when you can actually get paid and the employer or the union pays for your training. So it's not out of pocket.
And I think that that's a lot of the confusion. I think sometimes people, the number one misperception I hear is that you have to pay to be an apprentice, but it's actually the other way around. That's really important for people to hear because a lot of people are like, I don't have the money to become an apprentice. That's not the way it works. And it's a tried and true system. I mean, the system has changed over time, but for this history and preservation podcast, we'll point back that it's rooted in the guilds and it goes way back, thousands of years almost. And this concept of learning from someone else is one of the best ways of learning. I mean, for people who are like, I'm not a book learner, there's related instruction, but a lot of this is hands-on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Obviously, I'm not knocking the amount of, to become an electrician, for example, there's significant amount of math. And you can't not just anybody can walk up and say, I want to become an apprentice. Most of them have some kind of test that you need to take to make sure that you can read and write to the level required to do that job. Most of them, there are one or two exceptions, but I will say that if I had to go back and do it all over again, I absolutely would have chosen a trade. The amount of debt, high school debt or college debt is something that's talked about all the time right now. The cool thing is it's not an and or an either or with apprenticeships and college. You actually can get college credit with an apprenticeship as well. And more there are degreed apprenticeships that are happening. If you think about like a doctor is technically an apprenticeship. We just call it a residency. It sounds a little better, but they're working and getting paid while they're still in school.
Maybe we just need to change the terms. We need to call it a preservation residency.
Yeah, maybe.
So the apprenticeship connector that you're a part of, what is that? Does that have parallels across the country? Is that part of a movement? And what is it that you do there that is separate or distinct from MCCEI?
Yeah, so there is a huge movement across the country of getting youth into apprenticeship programs. Maryland is not the only state doing it, but we have been doing it for quite some time. I think we're about 6 or 7 years into our youth apprenticeship program here in the state of Maryland. There's a lot of change happening that I'm not going to get into too much, but basically what we're trying to do is convince employers that they can and should be hiring kids before they get that diploma. And there's been really awesome, there's legislation that's called the Blueprint for Maryland's Future that says there's lots of things that it talks about, but then the career and college readiness part of it, it says that by 2030, 45% of Maryland high school students when they graduate, will have either received an industry-recognized credential or participated in a registered apprenticeship program. So for an employer, especially if you already have a registered apprenticeship that you're hiring adults, it's very easy in Maryland to add what's called the STA option, which is a school-to-apprenticeship. Simple administrative clause that says, I'm going to hire 16 or 17-year-olds. Now, they have to be working towards their diploma. You can't just hire any kid off the street. But Maryland is working really, really hard to make it easier for employers to hire high school students. One thing we hear from owners is, I can't. My insurance company says I can't hire under 18.
You do hear that a lot. Yeah.
But that's actually an old wives' tale. Insurance companies don't realize, but the Maryland Insurance Administration just came out last month and said property and casualty rates are not affected by the age. So the workers' compensation is not affected by the age of the person working for you. In fact, even if there is a claim the age of the person that was involved in it has nothing to do with your rates won't go up based on the age of the person. So that's part of what the education that we're trying to do is that every time I say I get the union or, you know, the group non-joint sponsor to say, all right, we're going to change our standards to say that you have to be 17, not 18. But my employers, they're not saying, well, the employer, there's close to 30 electrical apprentices right now in IAC Chesapeake that are under the age of 18. And in fact, they just graduated their first cohort of 12 that are now journeymen that started when they were high school students. It can work. It's working. And your competition's doing it. So you need to change your standards, hire 16-year-olds and get these kids. They want to work. They want jobs. They want to be treated like adults. They want a paycheck.
And these are probably pretty decent paychecks for a 16-year-old.
Yes. So, I mean, the Maryland minimum wage just was moved to 15. But these kids, I was sitting in a classroom and the kids were going around saying how much they're making. Some of them are making $22 an hour. I mean, which is, they're 17 years old. Making $22 an hour, it took me a very long time to get there. So it's pretty cool. But I know the hesitation. We've been, you know, especially for the last 40 years, we've been saying you have to have not only a high school diploma, but you have to have a college degree usually right. to get a job. So it is a culture change and shift that needs to happen. But I think we're ready for it.
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder, too, if we just need to be doing even more education with parents.
Yes.
It's not always about the kids because the kids, mm-hmm. I think, see it or are like, I want to work with my hands. I'm tired of living in a digital world. I want to do things that make a difference. You know, and with AI and everything like that, it's making these types of careers even more important. Mm-hmm. There still have to be people to do these very physical jobs. And but I think there's sometimes a disconnect with the parents where it's like, no, college is where you go. And, you know, college is not going to end and there will still be many people doing it. But it's not for everyone. And so I think it's just right kind of finding what the right path is. If people are listening and they want to be more supportive of apprenticeships in their community or they want to help grow apprenticeships or get involved, you know, if they're in Maryland, Or beyond, what's like a good way for just the general public to be more of a part of the solution here?
Yeah, so absolutely. You can reach out to us at macworkforce.org and we can help. Even if you're not in Maryland, we can connect you to somebody in your state. We have a network across the country of organizations working towards apprenticeships. But know that apprenticeships aren't just for the skilled trades. We're working on creating a construction management apprenticeship right now. We're mm-hmm. working on creating medical assistant apprenticeships. And we have, I think it's finance and HR. I mean, you name it, there's apprenticeships being developed in the state right now. We're in Europe, apprenticeships, especially in Switzerland, are utilized in so many career paths that here in America, we require a four-year degree for. It doesn't have to be, especially when I talk to, like, for example, construction managers. And I say, like, all right, we're working on curriculum for high schoolers. What do they need to know? And they say, you just give me somebody that's hardworking and loves his job and I can teach him the rest. Well, that to me sounds like on-the-job training and doesn't require a four-year degree. So, but at the same time, we are, when we're mapping out that, I want to show if the person, when they finish their apprenticeship, still wants to go the four-year degree, like how do we give them credit for the curriculum that they've learned? Because it's actual schooling that they're going through. So we are working on that to make sure that if somebody does seek a higher education, that they can still continue it with an apprenticeship.
Fascinating. And, you know, as we've mentioned, we've done a whole podcast on this. We've also registered here in Maryland a registered apprenticeship program for historic trades, and we're working on national registration with the Department of Labor. So for the preservationists listening, there's a piece in there as well, and we have that over at Historic Trades. But if people want to learn more about you and what you guys are working on, where can they find all of that?
Yeah, so I'm very active on LinkedIn, but either mcci.org or macworkforce.org, and you can find me either way.
And we'll put those in the show notes. What are you guys working on next? What's the next big thing that we can keep an eye out for?
So like I mentioned, we are working right now on a middle school hands-on thing. But then we also have a women in construction pilot that we're working on that I'm really excited about, ways to not only provide leadership training and succession for women in the industry, but to train their companies so that they're a better place that they can work. So I'm pretty pumped about that.
That's exciting. It sounds like there's a lot of value in there. And for the preservationists listening, value for trades companies around in their community. Before we go, we like to ask people favorite historic place or site.
So this might sound a little cliche and cheesy, but growing up, my parents used to take me to Colonial Williamsburg all the time. I wanted to go to William & Mary just so I could work at Colonial Williamsburg, but they didn't have the major I wanted. But I still love that. I took my taking my kids there. It's just a happy place for me.
I like that. And you know, I think 300 and some episodes in, I don't think we've ever gotten that as the answer. So I like that one. Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. It's making a difference in the community, and always fun to talk with you and to partner with you. Thanks for joining us today, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to PreserveCast. To dig deeper into this episode's story, head over to preservecast.org for show notes and our collection of previous episodes. Don't forget to engage with this podcast by subscribing, commenting, and leaving a review. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at PreserveCast for even more. PreserveCast is currently recorded in Walkersville, Maryland, and sponsored by the 1772 Foundation and powered by Preservation Maryland. Thanks for listening, and keep on preserving.